Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Super Sunday, February 3rd, 2013. This is episode 950. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com now, click on the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Lantronics, makers of the X-Print server. Print from your iPad, iPhone, or any iOS device to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and use the offer code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, big screen TVs. On that big screen TV, a big football game this afternoon. And, yeah, actually, interesting, you don't have to have a big TV anymore to watch the Super Bowl. I want to thank the NFL for delaying the Super Bowl till after this show is over. Thank you, NFL. Last year, they streamed it, but you had, as I remember, you had to be a Verizon customer, right? It was on NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can't remember if you could watch it without that. According to the NFL, 2.1 million people watched it. It was the most watched single-game sports event ever on the internet. This year, the Super Bowl is going to be streamed to anybody who wants to watch it at CBSSports.com. And NFL.com. And I do think if you have the Verizon version of NFL Mobile, you can watch it on that as well. That's my plan. I'm going to be in the Superdome for the big game since my team's in it. And taking my iPhone and my NFL Mobile with Verizon. So I'll report back next week on how well that works. You have to, that's the last piece of the puzzle, isn't it, for people who don't want a cable subscription. We can get so much of what we watch on TV now via the internet. If you have a Roku or an Apple TV or actually almost any of the new TVs, the new smart TVs, you connect to the internet and almost a huge range of content available. What's missing, for the most part, is the live stuff, particularly sporting events, the Academy Awards, things like that. And that's been always the sticking point for what we call cord cutters. People would just want to get out from under the cable company. Of course, you still have to have internet access, which for a lot of us means you still have a cable bill. But it'd be nice not to pay the $100+ for the internet plus the cable, and just have the internet. But the Super Bowl's been one big issue. The big games in the NBA and NBA was smart. Very early on, NBA. Started putting its content online. I think NHL's doing it. Major League Baseball had that At-Bat program. That was very cool. Have you used that, MLB At-Bat? You can pay, and it's expensive. I think for the full season was something like $150, but you could then watch or listen to any game on your computer, on your phone, or your big screen TV. The Roku box had it. Apple TV, I think, had it. I think we're getting closer and closer to that day where the internet is all you need to get television of all kinds. The issue, of course, is that the cable content creators, or the television content creators, are very nervous about cutting the cord. It's one thing if you and I cut the cord. They can't. If you're HBO, you'd like to. You'd love to sell it directly to the customer and eliminate the middleman, right? Because HBO makes the show, but then the cable company takes a cut along the way. They're doing it in, I think, Norway. They're not doing it in the U.S. They have an app, HBO Go, but how do you use that app? You have to prove that you're paying for an HBO account on your cable company. You log into your cable account. Why do they do that? Given that it's not really in their interest to give some of the money to the cable companies, well, the cable companies have them over a barrel. if HBO said, hey, we're gonna just let people buy individual shows. Let's say the Sopranos were available, and you could just watch the new episodes. You have a little Sopranos app. If that were the case, then the guys who do the Sopranos wouldn't even need HBO. They could sell directly to you. That's the ultimate goal, is the people who make the shows go directly to the customers without any middleman, whether it's HBO or Comcast or anybody. But that day is far off because, of course, if HBO were to threaten such a thing, or a content provider or creator would threaten such a thing, they'd be cut off from their oxygen supply because they still need the money they get from the cable companies. David E. Kelly and all these other guys still need the money they get from HBO to produce the shows. We're not quite to the era where they can go it on their own, but we're very close. You saw that Netflix has agreed to produce new seasons of Arrested Development. And they bought a series that was being pitched around to the networks. In fact, I remember talking to Dana Brunetti, who's a producer for a company called Trigger Street. That's Kevin Spacey's production company. They had purchased the rights to an English show called House of Cards. They wanted to produce it in the U.S. And they were very close to signing a deal. Literally the night before, they were going to sign a deal with a major network. Dana gets a call at his home from Netflix. He said, they made me an offer I couldn't refuse. And he actually, and this is a brave thing to do, turned his back on network television and the money therein and said, all right, we're going to let Netflix have this. We'll produce this show, this original programming for Netflix. While I couldn't get the exact details out of Dana, and believe me, I asked as for money and everything, my sense was the money was as good, but more importantly, the creative control was better. And that's something a lot of creative types want, is the control. You know, one of the reasons people, creative types like HBO, is because they give them a lot of artistic license. So we're seeing the cracks. When companies like Netflix are starting to produce content, but what I'm waiting for the day the NFL goes direct to you and me. It says, you don't need to go through CBSSports.com. You don't need to go through Verizon. We'll sell you, just like Major League Baseball does, we'll sell you the rights to watch the Super Bowl. In the long run, I think it'll cost us less because you're not paying for the middleman. They're not scraping some of that money off. What would it be? $5 to watch the Super Bowl? Wouldn't that be great? Look what Louis C.K., the comic, did. I mean, this is great. I remember he talked about this. Now, he said, normally what I would do if I'm going to do a comedy special, I go to HBO, they buy it, they give me the cash up front, we get the venue, we produce it, and you know, we've already got the money to do all that, and then we get royalties on the viewership on the show. And I'd make a lot of money. But Louis C.K. he was a brave man. He was established. And he said, what if I just did it myself? What if I put up an announcement on the website? I'm going to do a comedy show. I'm going to do this. You can pay $5 to watch it live or after the fact. And he tried it, and it was a great success. He sold, I think, more than $1 million worth of tickets to that. I think in the long run, he made more money. And the audience was happier because it didn't have to have a HBO subscription and pay for a bunch of stuff it didn't watch. They could get that individual show. Eventually, I think this is the future. But it's going to be a while because we still have this issue. It's always hard if you have an established business to change the model drastically. You don't want to cannibalize your existing business. If you're the New York Times, you can't just go online and say, well, we don't need to make a newspaper anymore because all of your revenue right now comes from the newspaper. So you do what the New York Times does and what HBO does and a lot of companies. You dip your toe gingerly into the water. But everybody knows there's no way to get into the pool. The water's always going to be too cold if you just dip your toe. The only way to get in the pool is to leap right in. But nobody will do that. It's too scary. They don't want to alienate existing cable companies. They don't want to risk their existing business. Sometimes, by the way, that leap into the pool doesn't work anyway. Good example, and this is Kodak. Kodak had a very obviously very successful camera and film and processing business, but they saw the writing on the wall. They knew digital photography was coming, and they went in whole hog. They bought Ophoto. They had the great Kodak Easy Share site. They made digital cameras. They did everything right. They embraced digital, and they still went bankrupt. Why? Because there wasn't as much revenue as there was in processing and printing pictures. So even if you leap into the water, sometimes it's still pretty cold. Anyway, you can watch the Super Bowl. Do watch it. Tell these folks, we want it online. All right, we're going to go to the phones in just a second. You're listening to The Tech Guy, Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy on Super Sunday. I am Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy, and we're going to go right to the phones. Our first call of the day, and that is Nick in Northridge, California. You're very patient, Nick. Thanks for hanging on. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy.
Hello.
Hi, Nick.
Hi. Yeah, my question was, you see, I'm currently trying to learn to do networking, and, I love the program Packet Tracer, you know, to go ahead and have simulation when I go ahead and, create networks. But, you see, I'm also trying to go ahead and work a lot with the servers. So what I was thinking about doing, because I haven't seen any kind of emulation like that for, like, the server GUI interface, like Novell or something like that. So I was curious, if I was going to partition a hard drive as if it was two different hard drives, and I put like the server OS system on one, and I have my normal operating system on the other, is there some way I can go ahead and, on the same computer, go ahead and have it simultaneously have both operating systems go at the same time, so that way I can practice with the two, so that way I don't have to use two separate computers?
Yeah, in fact, what I would suggest is, and now I'm not an expert, this is not way beyond my competency. I haven't had to do this. And if we have any experts in here in the chat room, any input you can give me would be great. But what I would suggest is virtualization. In other words, you don't really need two computers. You just need one computer running Windows, normal operating system, and then use a virtual box like VMware or the free program VirtualBox. And have that have the network operating system installed on it. It'll basically be a window, just like an emulator, it'll be a window running the network operating system.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. If you go to VMware, VMWARE.com, you'll see that they have, and this will be very handy for you, actually, a lot of prepackaged operating systems, including a good number of network operating systems. I'm sure they have. Did you say you're going to use Novell's NetWare? No.
Yeah.
Really? People are still using that, huh?
Novell NetWare. Yeah.
Well, I'll be darned. So all you need to do is get the VMware player, and then you can get pre-fabricated operating systems. You don't even have to install them and just run them.
Wow.
Yeah, it's awesome. Certainly you should know about this.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Now, VirtualBox from Oracle is free, but is less capable. I think the VMware player is. I wonder. I thought that was free. I think if you're doing it for non-commercial use, it might be free. You certainly can get a free trial. If you have Windows 8, Hyper-V is a similar idea. So the whole point of this, it turns out, what you want to do is something very commonly done, which is to run one operating system on another. Mac users know about this. They do it all the time with VMware Fusion for the Mac or Parallels because they run Windows on the Mac. Windows users do it all the time to run different versions of Windows. In fact, remember Windows 7 for some time shipped with, might still, Windows XP emulation for compatibility. So this is not at all unusual. And I think VMware, you know, is an excellent choice. PC Guy says he installed Windows Server 2012 on VirtualBox, the free one, and it worked great. So lots of choices on this. I really do like the idea of VMware and the prepackaged VMware. I want to call them appliances. I don't know if that's what they call them, but it's great because you don't have to even install it. It's just an existing VMware file that lets you run another operating system. Good luck with your studies. It's a great area, frankly, to be an expert in. There'll be lots of work ahead for you, as long as you keep up to date, right? Enrique in Downey, California, you're next. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. Hi, Enrique.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I have actually a number of questions for you. We do healthcare at my work, and we are trying to jump on telepsychiatry. essentially, instead of sending a doctor out to see a client at their home, we serve most of our clients at their houses.
Yeah.
We want to be able to send out someone with a camera and have that therapy session via video chat.
So your clients don't even have to have their own computer or cameras. You're going to actually bring the gear out to them.
Right.
Wow.
Now, my first thought was Skype, but apparently because of HIPAA, I don't know if you're familiar.
I am familiar with HIPAA.
A lot of regulations.
Yeah.
They sort of kind of frown upon, you know, something that's so open that could be easily accessed.
You know, that's ironic because, in fact, Skype is famous for being secure. One example that I often give is Garry Kasparov, who former world champion of chess, Russian fella, who was a dissident in Putin's Russia, ran for president. And I remember interviewing him, and he said, "I only use Skype because it's encrypted, and the Putin's people can't snoop on me." Don't get your hopes up because Microsoft bought them. And while Microsoft will not admit to this, it's widely believed that Microsoft has put in a backdoor for government. Now, I'm sure HIPAA does not require that you use a solution that the government can't snoop on.
Right.
Law enforcement is never going to allow a law to be written that says, oh, and by the way, law enforcement can't snoop on this.
Right.
So I think Skype is probably compliant.
Okay. So I'm going to look more into that then. If the encryption is sufficient, then it might be.
Well, the problem with it is it's proprietary and they don't tell you how they're encrypting it.
Okay.
So, and you want video. I'm trying to think of a good video solution that is encrypted using a non-proprietary encryption. And frankly, I don't.
Well, let me give you a quick on the same train of thought. What our boss thought would be a great idea was, I don't know if you've ever heard of Teradek. They're here in Southern California.
Yeah, I love Teradek. Yeah.
So we've tried that for a while.
That would be over 3G.
4G. We're using...
But I guess that makes sense because you're not requiring your clients to have a computer, so they may not even have internet access. That makes sense. You are going to, in fact, have to go in with bandwidth.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what a Teradek is, it attaches to a video camera and does the encoding and then uses built-in 3G cards, or I guess LTE as well, to send the video. I think that's not a bad way to do it.
Well, the problem we can't overcome, and this is what came to mind. You were talking to a kid named Nathan earlier.
Yeah.
About sound, we have a problem having the two-way communication because there is it's between 8 and 15 second delay.
And Teradek will not work for two-way. That's, you hit the nail on the head. You're exactly right, and the reason we don't use Teradek, or we've used other solutions similar to Teradek for two-way, like satellite reports, is for that exact reason. There's a long delay for encryption. That's why Skype is pretty amazing.
Right, and so I wanted to go ahead and use Skype, but they really, really wanted to go with something that would allow us to use higher-end equipment, and it's a
Skype, believe it or not, well, okay, you can spend money and go to Cisco. Cisco has a solution and so forth, but it's going to cost you.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not so much a problem with the cost. It's the boss wants high-def video over cellular data. And
Skype's the best. There's never been anything better. That's the irony of this, and I've tried them all. I still say stick with Skype. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Clear.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Interesting issue. We were talking before the break about secure voice calls or secure video calls over the internet. And, you know, the internet is inherently insecure. Data that is sent over the internet makes multiple hops. That's how the internet is designed. And in theory, any hop along the way is somebody's server, and they could look at it. And of course, if you're using wireless, it's even less secure. People can watch the wireless traffic and so forth. So the solution to that is to take the traffic, video, audio, text, before you send it, scramble it, encrypt it, encode it in such a way that it can't be understood by anybody along the way, but only by a person on the other end who has the appropriate keys to unscramble it. That's called encryption. It's widely used in a variety of ways. And interestingly, Skype does support this kind of technology, this encryption. The issue for some, probably not for HIPAA compliance, is that the government is mandating back doors in a lot of these telecommunications technologies. In fact, last week we learned that one of the best known companies for providing encrypted transactions using VPN, virtual private networking, Barracuda Networks, has a back door. There's a hole in it. And in fact, these backdoor accounts are apparently set up so that they're accessible from specific addresses. So this is a very interesting thing. I think what's going to happen is we're going to see that many of these products, especially by big companies, have backdoors, not by accident, but because law enforcement is demanding it. If you think about it, if you're a police officer, a federal law enforcement officer, a federal task force, you don't like the idea that the bad guys or even suspected bad guys can have conversations you can't tap. So they've tried again and again to require these backdoors, and I think it's just a matter of time before the law is, in fact, requiring them. The problem is, of course, as soon as there's a back door, then you don't have the confidence in the technology you're using, whoever's listening in. I think it's a reprehensible thing. I understand the need to apprehend bad guys, and especially in the world where we're very afraid of terrorism. They don't like the idea that terrorists especially could have private conversations. But on the other hand, I don't have any faith that the government is not using this for fishing expeditions, looking, listening. The NSA's to all traffic. The NSA's building a big facility that is apparently to listen into all electronic traffic, yours and mine. And right now, encryption protects us against that kind of widespread fishing expedition, that kind of widespread snooping. But who's to know if it's going to continue that way? I think Skype is a good choice. It does have encryption. Whether Microsoft has later built in a backdoor for the use of the government is probably not important for HIPAA compliance anyway. For some reason, it does the best job of any product out there, open or closed. It's going to give you the best picture as well as the best video. It's just a good product. We use it all the time on our network. Let's go to Pat in Anaheim, California. Pat's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Pat.
Yes, hi. Leo, thank you very much for being out there for us.
My pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you for calling.
My question is directed to, I'm using currently a Dell Studio XPS 9000.
Okay.
All right, and I have a 21-inch monitor on that from Dell, and I want to upgrade to a 27-inch monitor. Is a Sony... what is called a ViewSonic widescreen monitor at 27-inch, a good choice.
Yeah. What you need to find out, though, is if the Dell Studio, what resolutions it will support. And I don't know offhand. It really is dependent on the video card that they put in that laptop, the video subsystem. But those specs should be on the Dell site. It'll say up to on an external monitor, up to whatever it is. And you don't want to get a monitor in general that is that's native resolution is higher than the highest resolution that the video card can support.
Okay, the resolution on the monitor is 1080p, which is what?
It's probably higher than that, actually. It's probably capable of 1080p, but it's probably 2880 by 1760 or something like that.
Okay.
So what you want to do is you just – it's a little internet research. It's not too hard. You want to find out what the – not 1080p. That doesn't tell you that much. What you want to know is what's the resolution? You know, is it 1920 by 1080? Is that what it is? That's not very high for a 27-inch monitor, but if that's what it is, then is the laptop video subsystem capable of 1920 by 1080?
Okay, and if it's not, is there features that you can purchase from Dell that would support that?
No, you can't really upgrade the video subsystem in a laptop. It's highly likely that it can, by the way. Those studios can for sure do 1920 by 1080.
1920 by 10 is what
Or it might be 1920 by 1200. You know, I could probably look it up. Just, you know, look up ViewSonic resolution. ViewSonic 27-inch resolution, and it'll tell you.
Okay. Other question with regard to that. This particular model does not come with a camera and or a sound bar. Is it a good idea to buy, say, a Sony Skype camera and sound bar for the unit?
Yeah, although I would prefer a Logitech.
Okay.
The 920, excellent. It has built-in microphone. It goes right on the top of the screen, HD quality camera and microphone. It's fantastic.
Oh, and microphone. Now, what about the sound bar then?
Well, you want a sound bar for output?
For listening to downloads?
For music, yeah.
Yeah, music.
I don't like sound bars in particular. You could just get, you know, any kind of computer speakers. The problem with the idea of a sound bar is to simulate 5.1 surround sound in a single speaker that goes under your computer.
Yeah, that goes under the monitor.
Yeah. Most of the stuff you're watching is not 5.1 anyway. Most of it's at best stereo. Are you watching movies in surround sound?
No, I don't watch movies on the computer.
It's all downloads?
Just downloads only.
I guess it depends where you're downloading it from, but I guess I can do 5.1, so a soundbar would be fine. I'm trying to think of who makes a good soundbar for a computer, and I don't off the top of my head know. But you don't want to have five speakers around you.
Oh no. The desk won't support that.
Yeah, yeah. Computer soundbar. Let me just check. Yeah, let me just look at some models. I haven't tested them. Altec Lansing is a good company. They make a soundbar for computers. That would probably. I used to have Altec Lansing speakers for my computer for a long time, and they're quite good. I bet you Sony probably has one.
Yeah, they quoted their price for a soundbar at $250.
That's not bad.
Okay, it didn't.
That's not bad. No. If you can listen to it better first, that'd be better.
Okay, amen.
But Sony, it's going to be all right if it's Sony.
Okay, and then the last question I have is Skype a fee-based?
Skype is free computer to computer. If you're calling landline phones, there's a small fee. And if you want an incoming landline number, there's a small fee. But it's not very expensive. Always free computer to computer.
I'm currently using DSL. Now, is that...
That's fine. That's any internet's all the same.
Okay. All right.
As long... The thing about Skype is you want to have... It's all about your upstream bandwidth. If you want at least 720K up.
Okay, is that when you say up? Is that
so? They'll quote you with your download speed of say 2 or 3 megabits, and your upload speed of say 512K. 512 is probably actually the minimum.
Okay,
but more is better when it comes to upstream for Skype. You get better audio and video. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Clear.
We'll be back with more of Tech Guy Show, episode 950. You probably figured this out, but I'm just going to mention this. I'm not live. I'm actually in New Orleans watching the Super Bowl. But in fact, I'm probably already at the Superdome by now. The game starts later this afternoon. But we recorded this show ahead of time and the podcast as well. So you get all of the Tech Guy goodness without any of the Tech Guy. The show this week, as always, brought to you by our good buddies at Stamps.com. Where's my scale? Oh, here it is. I love my $5 scale. Actually, it cost me nothing except $5 shipping and handling from Stamps.com. Stamps.com, you've probably heard me talk about before, is that great service for anybody who does a lot of mailing. It's a professional mailing service from stamps.com. I mean, if you look, if you are in a business where you have to mail stuff, last thing you want to do is have to go to the post office and buy new stamps because the price is going up, or mail a package. You know, you have to, in theory, you can't just pop a package of 13 ounces or more in the mailbox. You have to go to the post office. Not with stamps.com. You could do everything you would do at the post office from your desk with stamps.com. And you don't need an expensive postage meter. You don't need expensive ink or special paper or anything. You just need your computer, your printer. Any printer will do. Visit stamps.com. You can find out more about their service. They're really, really great. They work... I'll give you a couple of examples. You get discounts you can't get at the post office at stamps.com, up to 21% on express mail, up to 15% on priority mail. They automatically fill in forms for you if you're doing international mailing, for instance. They've got all the right forms. You print them out. You put it on the package, and the mail carrier comes and gets it. And he'll look and say, oh, you use stamps.com? No problem. I know you got everything. And boom, you're gone. You're done. If you are sending priority mail or express mail, it'll automatically send an email to your recipient saying, here's the tracking number. You know, it's really pro. You've seen people, you know, who do a lot of fulfillment with these kinds of solutions. But you can have it, too, with stamps.com. I want you to visit stamps.com. And you'll see a no-risk trial offer worth $80. Do not do that. I'm asking you to do a better one. Go click that microphone in the upper right-hand corner. The $80 bonus value turns to $110. That's more free postage for you, $55 in postage coupons you can use over the life of your account. A free digital scale, that one I just showed you, you just pay the shipping and handling. I think it's about $5. To make up for it, they've got a $5 supply kit and a four-week trial. Go to stamps.com right now, click the microphone, and use our offer code TECHGUY, two words, T-E-C-H-G-U-Y, to get that $110 bonus value. If you see my face, you know we went to the right place. If you do a lot of mailing, you're going to love stamps.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, wrapping up hour number one of the Tech Guy show for this weekend. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Website, I should mention that. I don't mention it enough. I apologize. Slap me around, will you? Website is techguylabs.com. That's where we take the show notes. So if you hear something on the show, you don't have to write it down. You can just go there, and every site I mention, every product I mention will be linked there. Better yet, after the fact, we also put audio and video of the show up, so you can look at each question and answer pair. You can add your own comments to it. It's all searchable. It's all at techguylabs.com. While you're there, you might want to take a look at our chat room. There's a link to our chat room there. Wonderful place. Nice people. About 80 moderators and 3 people in there, but that's okay. We like a high moderator to user. No. It's actually, there's usually between 800 and 1,000 people in the chat room every weekend. But I thank our moderators, our chief mod, Dan, and Brad and Canuck, and Can We Bowl, Please, Jason and Hip and Houdini 7 and Kevin H, Knox Harrington, Leggett, Life's a Zoo, Marmot, Mick, Night Flyer, Scooter X, Sly Ferret, Tech Zen, TTK, and the gang. Those are all moderators. They keep it fine and family friendly and on topic. We love the mods. TechGuyLabs.com, you'll find a link to the chat room and all the information you need about how to get in there. But back to the phones we go. Let's see. Daryl in Silverado, California. Hi, Daryl. Thanks for hanging on. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Oh, my great pleasure.
I have a question concerning a problem that came about in the last probably 6 or 8 months when I had DirecTV satellite service.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had it before, I used to be able to take certain snippets from news broadcasts and that type of thing. You know, I like to listen to Fox News and some of the things that they cover and that type of thing. And I would be able to record them on a DVD recorder for that little section, you know, or like if the...
So you had a DVD recorder hooked up to your satellite box and you could just press record and record it. Or did you record it on the DVR and then take a little snippet off the DVR? How did you record it?
I just have it connected from the satellite receiver, like you said,
yep,
into the recorder.
Okay.
And then I used to be able to just record it, and I could view it, you know, because it was already recorded,
right,
on the...
You were recording excerpts, so you can't do that anymore?
No, I can't do that anymore.
What happens?
The DVD recorder actually even goes into an error mode and destroys the...
Duh, that's not good.
Yeah, the DVD that I had. So I'm wondering, they claim that it's copy protection and that they're all copy protected now. So
they are. There's such paranoia among the television networks and the satellite companies. It's just sad because they just assume that their customers are all thieves. And so, among other things, they put copy protection on these things. Now, I don't know for a fact that that's what's wrong. Could just be your DVD recorder has failed. But I wouldn't be surprised. It's certainly the trend. Used to be in fact, I wrote a whole book on using a TiVo in the early days of TiVo to record stuff and then transferring it to DVD. It was a nice, easy procedure. But the folks at HBO and the movie companies decided that we were probably making DVDs and selling them on our front lawn. So they put encryption in and you can't do it anymore. And later series TiVos, it was only on the series one that it was doable. Did you upgrade your satellite equipment?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
That's what happened.
Yeah. And it stopped working as soon as you did the upgrade.
New contract. Yeah. It had
something
to do with the new satellite.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting point because they don't want to tell you what it really has to do with it, which is, we realize you were able to record stuff from the old satellite box. So it's, we're going to upgrade the technology. Yeah, that's it. It's a downgrade from the user's point of view, isn't it?
Is there a possibility that I'd be able to get an older DVD recorder? Would you know of one?
I don't think that's the solution because, no, it's not the DVD recorder. It's a satellite box.
Well, the DVD apparently checked. Well, no, the satellite box doesn't know that I'm recording it.
Oh, okay.
The signal's coming out of it.
You're using what's called the analog hole to record. You're playing it as if it's going to a TV, except it's not. It's going to a recorder.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they call that the analog hole. That's very hard to prevent.
And they've stopped the outlet for the regular RCA output, you know.
Right.
So they don't have that.
Guess why?
Out of the satellite anymore. They
yeah. Yeah, guess why?
It's yellow, red, and white.
Yeah, guess why? Because that's the analog hole. They can't prevent you.
Oh.
There is certainly ways to do this. You know how I know? Because I can download any TV show minutes after it ends. I can download it off the pirate networks in high def, crystal clear, beautiful. So people are able to do this. The problem is you have to be a pirate to do it. So what happens? People like you who want to just do it for legitimate reasons, learn how to be a pirate. You learn how the sneaky techniques that pirates use. And that's the real irony of all this, because it never succeeds at preventing piracy. Pirates have a strong incentive to do this. It only gets in your way.
Yeah.
The honest user.
All I want to do is just record the part that I like that
night. I know. You're doing it for legitimate reasons.
Right.
So
I think it's the recorder is where the problem is, in that it senses this protection, whatever they have.
Yes,
on
that's
it,
probably the case.
It's sensing it now. My question.
So you're
is,
thinking if I get an older recorder?
Uh-huh.
Now, what connection are you using to go out to the recorder?
The composite is the only other one they have
right.
besides the HDMI.
So
I'm taking the MDI on out to the television itself.
Yeah. So that's the analog hole. That's an analog output, and it's difficult for them to prevent that because, of course, they want you to be able to watch it on TV. I don't know what technique. The problem is, I don't know what technique they're using. Is it dish?
Direct TV.
Okay.
But I have checked with Dish, and they claim they've got the same problem. So it's a law, I guess. So that's why.
Well, it's not a law, but it's if they want to continue to do business with HBO and everybody else, they're going to have to, you know, pony up. It's ironic because, you know, Dish is being sued by almost everybody, all the networks for sure, because their Hopper product allows you to skip commercials. And so they're suing them. So Dish doesn't, there's not a lot of love lost on Dish's side for these content creators. They were willing to, you know, risk their ire to include 30-second skip. They knew they'd get sued. That's like waving a red flag in front of a bull. I'm not sure The problem is I'm not an expert on this. Maybe the chat room can tell me, is there a, what I need to know, is there a website where you can go and learn this information?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering
about.
Yeah,
there used to be, and I bet you there's still information there on the AVS forums. That's where you would figure out how to patch TiVos and so forth. If you go to AVS Forum, avsforum.com, I bet you could search there for your particular hardware. Everybody's gotten a little funny about talking about this because you understand they don't want to get in trouble. But yeah. If there's anywhere that they're talking about how to do this, and you need some specific information about your particular kind of hardware, and it would be on AVS Forum. So avsforum.com, that's probably your best bet, Daryl.
Okay, very good. Yeah. Now, talking about the chat room, I tried to connect with your chat room to find out, you know, to ask them this same thing 2 or 3 months ago. And I found that it seemed like there was a lot of chats going on back and forth and between people that were there, but I couldn't ever actually get in and see that I got to them, and I wasn't able to get my answer back from them.
Yeah, I would suggest. Okay, I'll talk about that when we come back. How about that? Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Clear.
Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. The Tech Guy Show. Taking your calls, talking high tech. I'm sorry, we ran out of time at the end of the hour. I apologized to our caller who said, I tried to get in the chat. Nobody's paying any attention to me. Nobody's answering my questions. We have a wonderful chat room. I just want to say this. We have a wonderful chat room. And great moderators. There's 10 or 11 of them. I mentioned the names. They do a great job. But there are almost 1,000 people in there. And if you've never been in a chat room before, and especially if you've never been in a chat room that big before, it's probably a little overwhelming to watch the chat scroll by. It goes almost too fast to read. And you may say, hello, hello, anybody? Does anybody hear me? And it may be overwhelming. Maybe just too much. And I apologize. Hangouts, be there for a little bit. Eventually it'll make sense to you. And maybe just treat it as a read-only thing. We do have several chat channels, and you can ask in there. There's a Twit Live channel, which is the channel that people basically watching and talking about the show. And we try to keep that on topic. But there's also a channel called Off Topic, and there's a help channel as well, Help Desk. So try the Help Desk channel if you have a question. You can ask questions there. All of this, by the way, information about and everything is on our website, techguylabs.com. Or you can go to irc.twit.tv in your browser, and you'll get all the information there. I do love having you in the chat room. It's kind of a weird addiction now because, you know, while I do this show and all the other shows, and I do about 12 shows a week, mostly on the internet, some on the radio, I always have a chat room going. I always can see what they're saying. I can always – and I'm always reading it out of the corner of my eye. And pretty soon you get used to the idea that they're there – talking back at you, and if you don't know an answer to a question, or sometimes I'm just looking for a funny line, they're very good writers. I'll just look down, and boom. I gave a talk about a month ago in Las Vegas to the New Media Expo, and I really could have used the chat room. I could have used a few good lines. Next time I'll figure out a way to bring the pocket chat room with me. You get addicted to them. I think of them as my externalized brain. We were also talking about the Dish and the Hopper. But, you know, this is kind of a continuation of what I talked about last hour. This is very interesting. Dish, of course, the satellite network. They make a DVR called the Hopper that does a couple of things that I think a lot of people want. One is it records all the networks, all the primetime shows at the same time. So you don't know what you want to watch. Don't worry. You got them all on the DVR. With hard drive space as cheap as it is, they can do that. Record everything. But the other thing they do, and it's getting them in a little bit of hot water, as I mentioned, is they have a 30-second skip on the remote. Now, why would you want a 30-second skip? Oh, commercials. Yeah. And CBS is suing them. They're all the networks are suing them. I think it was Les Moonves at CES who says, the Hopper must die or we will. This is an example of you know, these companies are really tied to business as usual. And as we enter the internet era, technology does not rest. You can sue it. You could put it out of business, as they did. You know, there was a great DVR. I don't know if you remember the replay. What a great DVR that was. Had a 30-second skip. Got sued out of business. TiVo didn't and survived. Actually, TiVo did. They just, it was a secret, hidden 30-second skip. You had to unlock it with these button strokes. The replay was amazing. But it got sued out of existence. Now, the nice story about that is the guy who founded Replay went on to found Roku and makes those little internet boxes, the Roku box. And it, does it have a, I think it might have a 30-second skip. But because network television is on, nobody cares. Nobody cares. Let's see, what else in the tech news? We've got a new version of Windows Surface coming out. Microsoft finally... next week, releasing its, actually this week, isn't it? February 9th, releasing its Surface Pro, the Windows 8 version of its Surface tablet. Yeah, a little bit disappointing hardware-wise. Battery life, not great, 4 or 5 hours. I think most people want to see more than that, probably double that at least. It's very much like the Surface RT. It's a tablet, higher resolution screen, though. It does not feature the latest, greatest Intel chipset. I think that's one reason it doesn't have great battery life. There are many Windows 8 laptops and tablets out already, but this is from Microsoft, you know, so it gets more attention as a result. That'll be coming out soon. Also interesting, coming out this month, Mobile World Congress. A lot of interest in this, the Samsung Galaxy S4. The Samsung Galaxy S4. Three is, I think, right up there with the iPhone as the best-selling smartphone. Pretty close. So now we're, I think we're still talking rumors. Mobile World Congress. I think, well, maybe Samsung had said, yeah, we're going to ship it. We're going to show it at Mobile World Congress later this month. The rumor is that we don't know anything about this S4, but the rumor is it would be coming out sometime probably around March or April, that it would be a 5-inch screen. The current S3 is, what, 4.3 inches, so bigger screen. Some have said a 8-core processor. I don't know if that's even, is that even possible? Do we really need it? The currently S3 has a quad-core processor in Europe and a dual-core processor in the U.S. It probably will have this new Samsung Exynos processor. It's called an Octa because it has 8 1.8 gigahertz CPUs. 8 in a phone. Crazy. Well, don't even know why you would need that. Uses 2 dual quad-core processors. It's arguably not an 8-core phone because the only one set is used at any one time, but that's still ridiculous. Pixels per inch, they say, will be 440. That's twice the iPhone. 2 gigabytes of RAM. This would be a killer phone, and most interesting to me, a 13-megapixel camera. These are all rumors, but they all are very credible based on, you know, how technology has advanced. Can you imagine a 13-megapixel? Now we're talking really good quality cameras. The other rumor that I think is very interesting is that Nokia is going to put its PureView camera on the next Windows phone that they make. That I like. That PureView is, get ready for this, 41 megapixels on a phone. Now, you generally don't use all of them. They use the extra megapixels for extra sharpness or zooming. But you could. They're there. this is why I love covering technology. This stuff technology does not, like rust, does not sleep. It is constantly moving ahead. And while desktop computing is kind of stagnant and stopped, mobile is just going crazy. 8-core processors, 5-inch screens, 13-megapixel camera. Supposedly, too, they have a flexible screen now that they're showing. They showed it at CES. that would be more robust than the glass screens on existing cameras. That is wild. That is amazing. Did you, you know what the frustrating thing, of course, is? If you just bought a Galaxy Note, as I did, Note 2, or maybe you just bought a Galaxy S3, all of a sudden now here comes the S4. We'll be covering that Mobile World Congress coming up in Barcelona in a couple of weeks. We'll certainly talk about that. The rumor, again, just rumor, is that the phone itself won't be available till April. So you have a little more time to enjoy your existing phone. We are, speaking of phones, going to go back to the phones, take your calls. Remember the website, techguylabs.com. That's how you can get the show notes, everything I talk about, all the links there. Thanks to James DeRuvo and Josh Windisch and our chat room, too, at techguylabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, the home theater, all that jazz. Hope you enjoyed yesterday's show. 3 hours of Scott Wilkinson. And thanks to Scott for filling in for me on a day off. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's see who's hanging on here. Who do we have? Bill, Tidewater, Virginia. Thanks for hanging on, Bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bill, are you there? Hello? It's dead silent, Kyle.
Yeah, it's silent on my end, too.
Silent on your end? Well, I'll put him back on hold. You can pick up and see if he's there.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'll move
sorry.
On to Greg in Pasadena, California. Hi, Greg. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, Leo, it's a special time to talk with you. And I think of all the people in the world, you probably know the answer to this more quickly and more clearly than anybody I can imagine.
Well, you're putting me on the spot. It's like when you're telling a joke and the person before you says, "This is a really funny joke." Now I got to live up to your hopes and wishes. Well, all right, go ahead. Let's see.
I'm not concerned a bit. I was recently gifted with a brand new, never before installed Series 2 TiVo.
That's a nice gift.
Which had been, you know, sitting in a time warp somewhere.
Yeah.
It's never been activated. And I'm thinking about two questions for you. First, I'm thinking about installing it in a place that there is no telephone service. And secondly, my question is it required to have a billing service subscription from TiVo to make the system work, even if I have purchased Leo Laporte's Guide to TiVo?
Which was a Guide to TiVo 1. As I mentioned to that caller last hour, the TiVo 1 was the last great hackable TiVo. When they came out with the TiVo 2, they made it a little bit more complicated. And the whole idea of TiVo was that you would, in the Series 1, you'd get on the, it would periodically dial home to validate the subscription and download the TV guide information. The TiVo 2s started having Ethernet ports, I believe. You have an Ethernet port on that one, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So they started supporting network connections. But to my knowledge, you did need to phone home from time to time, unless I'm mistaken.
Well, actually, this one, I think, just has a cable input.
Just cable, no Ethernet.
It has S-Video and...
But it has a phone jack on the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's more like the first generation where it needed to make a phone call home. And, you know, they ostensibly they did that for programming guide purposes, but really I think it was to validate that you had an active TiVo subscription. Which brand of TiVo Series 2 is it?
Which brand?
Yeah.
Oh, it's, I've got the book here in front of me. It's a Series 2 TiVo User's Guide.
Yeah, it doesn't say Sony on it?
No, it's a real TiVo.
It's a real TiVo. Well, Sony made a real TiVo. The reason I ask in our chat room, TV's Egon says, the Sony TiVo 2s were fairly hackable. However, the other Series 2s really did need phone and service subscriptions to work. Now, I will tell you somewhere you can call or visit. Are you in Southern California?
Oh, yeah.
There's a great place in Southern California called Weakneez, Weakneez.com. Weakneez does TiVo stuff. They were a great resource for the book, actually. They're TiVo hackers. They sell TiVos. They sell upgraded TiVos. They sell upgrades to TiVos. And if anybody knew how to get that TiVo 2 working without a TiVo account, it would be they.
Interesting.
Yeah. This is a great website. Good thing to know about. Anybody who owns a TiVo should know about. Weak Knees, WEAKNEES.com. And then I mentioned to our caller who was having trouble with his dish, the AVS Forum is also a great place to get information. But it is my, to my knowledge, that Series 2 needs a subscription. And
otherwise you won't get a channel guide.
Right. Which means it's of limited use because you can't say record. I guess you could say record this time, but you really want to say record this show.
Right. Interesting. So if you don't have a way to connect it to the phone, then you're really up.
They sold. I think they sold devices you could connect to it that would connect it to the internet.
Okay.
Yeah, I just don't think it works without a subscription.
So you're in for a few bucks a month.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Yeah.
Those things were great devices. TiVo, it's an interesting story, really. It's a puzzle more than a story, which is that they created the... it's actually a very interesting story if you really get into it, because the first company to do this, Replay TV, they made the first DVRs, got sued out of existence because they had a 30-second skip feature in it that allowed you to skip commercials easily. Same reason... that Dish and the Hopper are now being sued for exactly the same capability. Networks don't take kindly to any technology that allows us to skip commercials. Replay got put out of business. The guy who started Replay has gone on and founded Roku, which is the best way right now to connect a television to the internet and watch TV shows on the internet. So he had a second half to his story. TiVo came along and TiVo complied a lot more. They understood after watching Replay get taken down. They were competitors, and Replay just got taken out. They realized, well, maybe we better play along with the networks and so forth. So they put in encryption. I suspect the reason you have to phone home is more than just getting the guide. I think they want to make sure that you haven't hacked the thing too much and so forth. If anybody knows what you can and cannot do with your TiVo, I would guess it'd be Weak Knees. They're certainly a great resource for you. Sometimes a free TiVo, too. It's not worth a whole lot. They do have a wireless adapter for the TiVo Series, too. I'm looking on the TiVo page. So, you could get a subscription, get a wireless adapter, plug it in. They all work with WEP. That's interesting. No, that's how old this stuff is. Richard Yan, our chat room, says, "Hey, Leo, my little sister goes to the bathroom during commercials. How can I turn her in?" I'm sure CBS would like to know. Oh, what a story that is, huh? You just don't mess with that stuff. Somebody asked, Leo, aren't you going to get in trouble for talking about things like getting around this, recording, allowing people to record, hacking your TiVo? I never have so far, and it's pretty clear to me. I'm not encouraging illegality or piracy or theft. Actually, I take it back. I'm not encouraging theft. I'm not encouraging piracy. I want you to act ethically. However, sometimes some of these things do violate the Digital Millennium Copyright Act because it's so strictly written that you cannot reverse engineer encryption. You cannot hack stuff. It really prevents all of that. I'm asking and encouraging, and I know you are going to all act honorably and ethically, and I'm not giving you information that you need to know to steal. And the truth is, pirates know how to do this anyway. If you have an incentive to steal, you don't need me. You know more than I do. I just think that honest people should be able to use the gear they bought and should be able to use it in a way that works for them. And it's not my job to protect the interests of companies that want you to be limited in how you use their hardware. It's my job to show you how to use your hardware as you choose. And I encourage you to act honorably and ethically and not steal content, because, of course, you know that. And if you don't pay for content, people who make it will stop making it. But this is the funny thing about all this. Do we not spend more on content than ever before? Do you not personally spend more than ever before? Do you not buy more TV shows, pay more for your cable bill? Are we not pumping hundreds of dollars a month into the content economy? Let's be honest. They got our money. So let us do what we want with the content that we buy from you, please. I beg of you. You're doing fine. You're doing fine. You don't have to be so paranoid. We are not all thieves. All right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come right after this. More of the Tech Guy show coming up in just a bit. But first, a word about this. This is my Lantronics X-Print server. Simple little thing. This little doohickey attaches, you see right here, the Ethernet and the USB ports for your printer. Now, your USB printer is a network printer, and you can even print to it directly from an iPad or an iPhone. It's an AirPrint printer, fully compatible with the iPad and the iPhone. You don't need any special software on your device. The regular print menu prints right to your printer. It also will add any network printer that it finds to your AirPrint printers. So it's a great way to make a USB printer a network printer and make it compatible with AirPrint, and to take an existing network printer and make it compatible with AirPrint. Now, it works with almost 4,000 different printers. It's almost guaranteed the printer you have will work with this great little device. There are two versions. There's the home version that can connect to up to 8 USB printers and 2 network printers. That should be enough for any home. Then for $199, there's the office version that does 8 USB printers and as many network printers as you want, and also has Active Directory support and other kind of enterprise-level supports. This is just a really cool little device. $99. You don't need any software, no configuration, although there is an advanced configuration interface via the web. Just really simple. Just plug it in, plug your printer in, plug your network in. You're good to go. Now, if you use our offer code TWIT, you'll get free shipping on your order. So go to Lantronics website, xprintserver.com/twit. xprintserver.com/twit. If you're an iOS user and you got to print, this is a great idea. Great idea. Okay, back to the phones we go. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, at taking your calls, talking tech, getting in trouble. Waiting for that lawsuit. The website is techguylabs.com. And yes, I still encourage you to go to the chat room. They're nice people. It just, you know, it goes a little fast. There's a lot of, it's like any ecosystem or subculture. If you're new to the subculture, at first it seems a little baffling and weird. But as you spend time there, it all starts to make sense. Chat room is just like that. Just like that. All the information about how to get into the chat room, how to use it, techguylabs.com. Chat room, I promise you, will be very nice. They're saying that right now. We're nice. We're very nice. We'll be nice. There's something about geeks and nerds. I guess because for so long we were marginalized. You know, we were the AV squad. We were the kids that were mocked, couldn't get dates and so forth. And so as a result, we developed our own kind of subculture and our own language and our own way of hanging out and being. And in a way, it's the revenge of the nerds. Then when normal people want to hang with us, we treat them the same way they treated us in high school. Okay? That's the fact, Jack. Let's get back to the phones, but I'll treat you nice because, I was popular in high school. Rob in Cincinnati, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, you say at the beginning of every show anything that has a chip in it, and I have a digital horror story if you'd like to hear it.
I'd love to hear it, sure.
Okay. There is a type of lock system that is used in a lot of hotels around the
country. Oh, I know where you're going with this one, yes.
Well, I got it. And my wife and I went to the fitness center of this Scottsdale resort. I won't name it. And we were back an hour later, and somebody had gotten into the room and cleaned us out of $16,000.
Oh, my goodness.
2 Martin guitars.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
2 MacBook Airs, 2 iPads, iPhone. And believe it or not, back in December, the guy who was the thief had come all the way from Phoenix – to Ohio and got stopped on a routine traffic stop, picked up and jailed for drugs, extradited to Arizona, and the guy who was with him saw the long arm of the law climbing down on him, got a lawyer, squealed, and some of my stuff was recovered, unfortunately.
Hallelujah.
One MacBook Air, my iPhone, and some other small stuff.
These are locks made by a company called Onity, and it was actually I think it was at DEF CON this year that it was demonstrated how you could easily get around these Onity hotel room locks using the service port in the bottom of the lock. And they even, the hacker, Cody Brocious, who demonstrated this, even showed how the device that would crack them could be disguised as a dry erase marker. So you could, with impunity, wander into a hotel, go down the halls, use this dry erase marker, plug it into the port, and just walk in the door. And I do remember hearing about some major break-ins in Arizona, so you must have been one of them.
Oh, well, it was pretty amazing. And
4 million hotel locks in the United States use this Onity lock.
Frightening. And I was at an event with the Kingston Trio, and they've been having people go for the 13 years and never had a room broken into at this place. And anyway, but it's the device the guy used was more, you'd see the circuit board, a modified resistor across a couple of ports. And it was just pretty amazing that it was so easily hacked, and we were so quickly.
Onity's initial response was to send hotels a little piece of putty that they could plug the hole up with, rather than fixing the problem. But now they are saying, oh, we're going to offer a fix. It's just so expensive with 4 million locks out there that are easily, I mean, by the way, this is easily cracked. Onity kind of didn't really have a very good answer to this. It's a real significant security flaw.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing when I found out about it and saw the stuff, and amazing to get some of the stuff back, including one of the MacBook Airs.
Well, I'm so glad. I'm so glad.
Yeah. But the Martin guitars were gone. They were traded for crack cocaine.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I really am. Are you're a performer yourself?
Well, primarily, I've talked to you a couple of times in the past. I'm an air show announcer, but I'm a former full-time musician, player, and we're still producing some records here and there.
Oh, but, I'm so sorry. That's just terrible.
But the Martin guitars, one of them's been replaced. The other is on the way, and I'm going to end up with better instruments, but still.
Yeah, and you can't really fit a Martin into one of those little tiny safes they provide in hotel rooms. But it's a good thing for people to know, and you might want to use those safes if you have valuables in a hotel room. It's not the maid you have to worry about. It's the fact that these locks are really not very secure.
We were very fortunate. My wife said, come on, let's put our wallets, and she put her jewelry in the safe. And
good.
So I lost a couple of credit cards, but got them stopped quickly. But my main stuff to get home on the airplane with all my ID and stuff, all that stuff is safe.
Rob, is there something I can do to help you?
The idea of wanting to get the word out to people, because and I've been quiet about it, but since we got some of the stuff back, I even know the name of the guy. That's the strange part.
Yeah.
He left videos of himself, what an idiot, on the iPhone, on an iPad, and on my MacBook Air.
Well, you know what? Can I tell you something? People who do this aren't the brightest people in the world. Yes, it's easy. He probably, certainly didn't build this device that cracked the locks, but he found somebody who did, and he probably bought it from him. It's just, these people aren't intelligent, and, you know, crooks aren't. I've talked with the Secret Service and others. In fact, I gave a lecture many years ago for the Secret Service about computer forensics. And they told me, you know, because we were talking about the fact that there's strong encryption out there, things like TrueCrypt, and if a bad guy doesn't give you his password, you can't really get into this stuff. And they said, you know, the truth is these guys almost always tell us the password. I said, what? They said, yeah. most of the time you just ask them. And they say, yeah. it's not that hard. But these guys are just not that bright. It's sad. Onity, Onity, is the company that makes these locks, although I wouldn't be surprised to hear that similar cracks are available or practiced on other kinds of locks. This was revealed at the Black Hat, or probably DEF CON, which is the hacker convention right after Black Hat in Vegas last fall, and that's when you started to see a whole rash of these. I'm so sorry that happened to you, Rob. Really, really too bad. Steve in Fairlawn, New Jersey, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. First of all, I'm jealous because I look at the thermometer behind you and it says it's 70, and I look at mine and it says it's 7.
Well, I'm not outdoors, but I do have to say it's a sunny, beautiful day in Petaluma, California right now. The temperature probably is in the mid-60s anyway. Where are you located?
In New Jersey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I have your low-tech question of the day.
Okay.
What I have is an old Macintosh Plus with a SCSI drive.
Wow. And
yeah, it's really old. I'm thinking this.
You're not still using it, are you?
No, I'm not still using it.
It's an antique.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what the call is about. It actually has a SCSI drive, and I have a little boy, so we powered it up, and we found an old version of Microsoft Office, and we found games, and we found all the stuff from its time, and everything's still working. I mean, this thing doesn't even have the Macintosh fade. It's still its original white color.
Wow. Yeah, because there is a solution you can buy that will take that yellowing plastic and bring it back to its original gray.
I had heard about that, but I'm still at the original gray.
That's awesome. Wow, what a wonderful thing to have.
I got to tell you, it was weird because it's like going back in time, and you look at you can see how we got to where we are.
Oh, yeah.
All the beginnings are there.
Well, you know, we have in our studios, we have lots of these old computers, not only original Macintoshes, but Osborne's and so forth. Hey, hang on, because I got to take a break. We'll come back and talk some more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we were talking to Steve in Fairlawn, New Jersey, who has... Wow. Is it a Mac Plus?
It is a Mac Plus, yes.
Yeah. 128K?
128 and a SCSI hard drive. So I think it's got up to 20 meg of storage back.
Wow. And boy, those 20 megs were expensive, as I remember.
This thing is bigger than a printer. It's
Yeah. I remember those Mac. I can't remember what they call them, but yeah, I remember those very well. Wow.
I was actually impressed because, you know, my son's 12 and he'd never seen anything like this.
Oh, so he's not – okay, so you said you're setting it up for your kid. It's not a little kid. You want your 12-year-old to kind of learn about the classics.
Well, that's what he was doing. He was experimenting and he was able to
neat.
Pull it out of the bag, assemble it, power it up, get it all up and running, and he was mesmerized by the thing. He was playing with it for hours.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these are classics.
No, it really was. But the question that I have is, am I looking at a machine that has some kind of value that I should be taking more care of?
No.
You don't think so, right? I think they sold millions of these things.
They did. You can go online at on eBay or Craigslist and see what people are charging for these, but it's not very much. You know, we have – it's so – I mentioned that our studio is really a museum of antique computers. We have really an incredible array. If you ever get up to Petaluma – it's an open studio. You're invited. Come by, and I'll give you a little tour of all the stuff we have. We got a 25th anniversary Macintosh. We've got an Amiga, as I said, an Osborne. And yes, I think a Mac Plus. One of our engineers, Alex Gumpel, collects these things. He doesn't use them. He collects them. Now, he only buys them. Alex, you only buy them with the original box and the original manuals. And I think he's got a Mac Plus sitting on his desk. He doesn't turn them on. How much, let me ask you, Alex, how much would a Mac Plus in mint condition be worth?
With the box, it could go for over 1,000.
Over 1,000 if you had the box, the manuals, the original gear. If it's just the Mac Plus by itself.
No, it's got everything. It's got the manuals, the discs. It's got the original carrying case with it.
The original carrying case. It's got the SCSI drive. Yeah, I think you might be talking $1,000. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not looking to sell it. I was just curious what, you know, how should I be treating this thing?
The thing by itself, just a few hundred dollars. It's really the you know, it's that you know, action figure mint in box stuff, right?
Yeah.
The geeks who buy this, and Alex, you don't use them. You just collect them because you want it to be in the box. He says he plays with them occasionally. He sits in his room and he's surrounded in a circle by old Macintoshes. Yeah. No, it's not worth a whole lot. It's more the memories because, as you said, they made millions. There was no scarcity of these. And probably there are people with them in their garages, in their back rooms, in the closets.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Yeah. But I mean, it is a trip in time. Every
well, time. I think its greatest value is in its nostalgia factor to you, its memory to you. I mean, it's so these came with a megabyte of RAM, I stand corrected, expandable up to 4 megabytes. It was the first with a SCSI bus. So you were really early on in terms of that. It was a 68,000, a Motorola 68,000 running at a whopping 8 megahertz. So, yeah, and $25.99 for the computer alone. I think the hard drive was $1,000 additional, as I remember.
Yeah, the hard drive is bigger than the unit.
Yeah. 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 There's a picture on Wikipedia of one at the Design Museum in Gothenburg, Sweden. But so even though it is a museum piece in a way, I don't know if it has any collector's value, really.
Right. So it's really just a nostalgic value.
Yeah, but what a wonderful thing to have. And so your 12-year-old, he's turned it on, he's played with it?
He actually was able to assemble it. I mean,
that's really neat.
I remember when it was a big deal to assemble it, you know, and he had a look at the manual, and he had a laugh at the manual because he was looking at, this is how a mouse works.
Oh, my.
And he was laughing, and yeah. He was like, how a mouse works, and they wrote a chapter on it.
But the irony is, it wasn't that long ago. It was 1986. It feels like, when you look at it, a lifetime, but it wasn't a lifetime.
Yeah, no, I remember when the original PCs were hitting the desks of people.
It's 26 years ago. It's not, yeah. It's not. So we've just seen this stuff transform so quickly. You know, you ride in airplanes all the time that are 26 years old. That's not ancient. But when it comes to a computer, it's useless. It's ancient.
Yeah, his iPhone has more power than the...
iPhone, heck, yeah. His iPhone's got more power than a supercomputer of that era. Seriously, than a Cray supercomputer.
Yeah. You know, it's just, to me, it was just such a trip backwards.
It's fun. I think it's great, and I think it's wonderful to share this with your kid. And that he's interested is a good sign. And, you know, I think it's good for them to understand how far we've come and in such a short time. We, as human beings, we're like the proverbial frog in the water that's slowly brought to a boil. We don't notice these changes because they're so relatively gradual. We just kind of take it for granted that it is the way that it is. And I think it's great for a kid to see, you know, in my day, you know, we had to struggle. You know, it's really fun is to play the old games on these things and say, man, we thought this was, you know, you show them Doom, which was that game was groundbreaking, huge. You show them Doom and they go, wow, you thought that was cool, huh? Pitfall, the original Pitfall. You thought that was cool? Any Atari 2600 game, they'll just mock us. All right, back to the calls we go. Bill in Virginia Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bill.
I want to get the Galaxy Note 2. You talk so much good
love
about it.
Love it.
And I want to slingbox my TV to it.
Okay.
And to save money, I know you're not crazy about Sprint, but they have the unlimited data.
It's good. No, I'm not uncrazy about it. I like Sprint. You've got to have, if you've got Sprint in an area where it's good, unlimited data is great. Unlimited data is meaningless in areas where Sprint data is not good.
Right, I think they've gotten some LTE in Virginia, and I'm hoping they'll expand it pretty quickly.
We're supposed to have it here in Petaluma, and boy, you got to be standing right under the tower, and even then, it's not as fast as AT&T HSPA. So that's right. But that's just here. Like I said, it really depends on where you are.
So I guess it would be good just to go in the store, the Sprint store, and see if they can.
Do it. Put, you know, see if they'll put Speed Test, which is a little Android program on that thing, because that'll tell you right away.
But I won't have any trouble sending the Sling Box, like, so I can use my cable channels. And
so you need the Sling Box software. I think it's $20. You put it on your Android phone. They have for other smartphone platforms as well. You put it on there, and you got your Sling Box on your home theater system. That's on the internet. It's password protected. You log in. You know, I'm going to the Super Bowl in a minute. I'm gonna have the iPad and my Sling Box, and I'm gonna watch the game in the stadium. Now that's gonna be fun. It's for stuff like that. It's like, I want to watch the Super Bowl tonight, but I have to go to a wedding. So you bring your and I'll tell you, nice thing about a Galaxy Note, that 5.5-inch screen, it's just about as big as you could be and still be a pocketable phone, and it's pretty usable for watching stuff like your TV.
Right, because there's so much data. If I go pay for the data.
Well, you're right, and that's where Sprint has a real advantage. If Sprint LTE is good in your neighborhood, you're golden. Because it's, you know, if it's, and it doesn't have to be 40 megabits down. If it's 5 megabits down consistently, that's plenty.
Okay.
You'll get HD. It'll look great.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you, Leo.
You're welcome. Enjoy it. It's my favorite phone. It's the phone I carry currently. Because I like a big screen. Android Jelly Bean, which is the current version of Android that's available on this phone and newer Android phones, really, in my mind, is as good as iPhone. Better in many ways. You know, you could say, and I think it was fair to say a few generations back, that it wasn't as snappy, it wasn't as fast, it wasn't as reliable, it used to crash a lot more. But I think with the latest version, 4.1 and later, they've really got a reliable, robust operating system. I never have crashes. That is fast. And partly that's because, frankly, these processors in these new phones are amazing. I mean, we're talking quad cores in here. Literally, Cray supercomputer speed. All right, hey, we're going to take a break for the news at the top of the hour. More to come. Hour number three of the Tech Guy Show. Don't forget our website, techguylabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, Super Bowl Sunday. Hey, we're taking your calls for those of you still watching or listening. 8888 Ask Leo. I'm a Niners fan, so I'll be very interested in the outcome of this game. But we talk about the big game all the time in tech on this show, and there is a big battle coming up. BlackBerry 10 is out. Have you seen the new BlackBerry? Ooh, baby. Bermont was asking in the chat room, am I the only guy in here who's going to buy a BlackBerry 10? I think very intriguing, very exciting. I want to see a successful, surprisingly successful phone from RIM. RIM's been struggling, you know. I mean, the BlackBerry, which was dominant, particularly in government and business, it was my favorite phone until 2007 when the iPhone came out. It really was the earliest of smartphones, and has just been struggling like crazy. It felt like the last nail in the coffin a few months ago when they said, doesn't look like BlackBerry 10 will be out until 2013. We all thought, oh, well, that's it for RIM. Well, they've managed to survive. They've managed to hang in there, and now here comes BlackBerry 10. And, you know, from everything I've seen, it's impressive as heck. Who'd have thunk it? They may end up the comeback kids. That's why it's like every day is a Super Bowl in the tech industry, I tell you. Who would have thought it? Very impressive operating system, very modern looking. It slides in from the sides to get previous applications, good multitasking. Looks like a good camera, very good camera in there. Not sure. It may not be till March you'll be able to buy one of these. But they are handing out the development kits. Do not expect, at least on this first one, do not expect a physical key. As far as I can tell, looking at the pictures of it, it looks like the initial devices will just be big glass screens like the iPhone, like the Android phones. But I do believe that they will have a physical keyboard on later models of BlackBerry 10 devices. So you'll have a choice, I guess. And that's one of the reasons people love their BlackBerries. They want a physical keyboard. And there was no better physical keyboard than on the BlackBerry. BlackBerry 10 seems very modern. Now, you've got a problem when you release a new phone. You've got you need to have apps. And nobody's been developing for BlackBerry 10 because nobody knew anything about it. Everybody's been developing for iPhone and Android. We are, by the way, in June, it's expected that there will be more apps in the App Store on Android than there are in on the iPhone store. Well over 250,000 on each. No Angry Birds. What are you going to do? How can you? Well, I think they're going to have more apps than you think. BlackBerry 10 is based on an existing operating system called QNX, QNX, which is really a very fast, very efficient operating system. And the apps, as I understand it, are basically what we call HTML5 apps. So they're easy to write compared to writing an app for iOS or Android. BlackBerry has also told us that they're going to make the cost of these BlackBerry 10 apps very inexpensive. And that was a concern. You know, in the past, you know, we're talking $20, $30 for apps. It looks like they're going to be much closer to the dollar or two that iPhone and Android apps are. That's good news. Research in Motion had a big event where they invited developers to take their existing apps and port them over to BlackBerry 10. They got 19,000 apps submitted. So I suspect it's not going to be the desert some people are worried about when we get these BlackBerry 10s. It's funny. I guess it's partly because they're the underdog. Partly because I loved BlackBerry in the day, but I want them to do well. I want them to do well. They're spending 2.9. Wait a minute, that can't be right. Is that right? $2.9 billion to launch BlackBerry 10? That can't be right. Wait a minute. Let me read that. Billion with a B? Okay. That's according to digitaltrends.com. I think that, you know, it's going to see a lot of acceptance in government and business where BlackBerry's, you know, they never gave up on BlackBerry's, right? RIM has reported that 1,600 companies have already signed up for BlackBerry 10 training. So BlackBerry 10 is going to probably do well in the business, in the enterprise. Key is going to be how they do in, you know, with normal consumers. That's going to come down to how many apps. BlackBerry's been paying $100 to developers for every app that they port over to the store, and that's worked well. Tens of thousands. What did I say? 19,000 apps have been ported. $10 million set aside to offer developers. This is good. There's going to be this unified inbox, the hub, which I like. Multiple email accounts, plus call history, plus BlackBerry Messenger, which still has its adherence. Text messages. And then third-party messaging systems like WhatsApp will be able to write to it, as well as Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. All into one big inbox. That's an interesting idea. Calendar will be in there, too. Full multitasking, that's what the QNX operating system gives you, which is real-time multitasking. The videos I've seen of BlackBerry 10 look very snappy, very fast, very comfortable. There'll be two phones, as far as I know, one with a touch screen only, and one with a BlackBerry-style QWERTY keyboard. I like that idea. And BlackBerry Messenger is not dead. Let's hope. Crossing my fingers. Oh, I forgot to mention something Apple didn't do, and unaccountably in iPhone 5, and so almost certainly will do maybe this year with the iPhone 5S. BlackBerry 10 will have NFC as well and mobile payments built in. NFC is important, and I really don't understand why Apple. I guess Apple felt like, well, we can wait a little bit. It's not everywhere. That's the ability to tap your phone to a pay point or a special sticker that will give it information. And it's a feature of most of the new Android phones. I can tap my Galaxy Note. For instance, we have a sticker out in the lobby at the Tech Guy Labs. If I tap my phone to it, it checks me in on Foursquare. It says, Leo is here. That kind of thing. It's got a high cool factor. It's in all the Android phones. It's in many of the new Windows phones. It is not in the iPhone. I think it will be. I know it will be in the BlackBerry. That's important, too. So we've seen it. It's here. It's coming in the next few months. I am very excited. I good luck, BlackBerry. Good luck, RIM. Maybe they will survive. Let's hope so. And meanwhile, as I mentioned, the Samsung Galaxy S4 coming out at Mobile World Congress next month. This is and the rumors about iPhone 5S. I think Apple, you know, I wonder, Apple, according to the rumors, Apple's not going to change the form factor at all of the iPhone 5. I guess not. That's how they do it, right? The 4S looked just like the 4. The 3GS looks like the 3G. But I don't know. I think Apple is getting a little bit lapped, a little bit left behind by the rapid innovation that's happening on the Android platform. That scares some people. Every 6 months, a new Android phone. Every 3 months, every 1 month. Now we've got BlackBerry 10. We've got these incredible-looking Windows phones, the Lumia and so forth. And Apple says, well, we like what we have for another 2 years. I don't know. What about wireless charging? Nathan in the chat room says the S4 is rumored to have this new Qi wireless charging where you just plop it on a charger. You don't have to plug it in. I love that. Some of the Windows phones have that already. The fatty zone in the chat room says the iPhone 5, best form factor in the world. Nickname in the chat room saying, I loathe the iPhone 5 form factor. There you go. That's what I like. I like a battle, a horse race. I'm telling you, it's the Super Bowl. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about computers. We're talking about the internet, travel, gadgets, all sorts of great stuff. Let's get back to the phones. And my good friend, Aaron B. in Mesa, Arizona. Hey, Aaron, Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing today?
I'm great. The chat room is going good, Aaron. Aaron B. is always in our chat room.
I'm here.
What do you say to that guy in the first hour? He said, I went in the chat room. Nobody was answering my questions.
You know what? The thing is the best time to go to the chat room, here's my advice, if you go to the chat room and you're a newbie, is try to go not during a show.
This is the peak. This is the rush hour. If you got to get a question answered, it's better to do it when I'm not talking, frankly.
It's true. Go during a show that may be a lesser popular show.
Right.
Or when there's no show at all. And that's when people, we spent,
It's 24/7.
I was doing tech support for some guy one night at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm happy to do it.
Go in the middle of the night. Go when you know what, the best time to go? Super Bowl's coming up in a few hours, during the Super Bowl, because the geeks couldn't care less, and they're in there and they're chatting and it'll be nice and calm, and you can go and you can ask for help.
It's true. That's the best, and eventually you'll get the pattern to it. But it is.
There is a culture, though. There is a unique culture in there.
No, unique. That's a polite way of saying it.
Yes, and whatever you do, weird am I in the chat room saying, and he's absolutely right. Don't ever go in there Tuesday evenings from 7 to 10 Pacific. We have a show on. The name will give you a hint. NSFW. And that is it is safe for work. It's a great show, but it's kind of a wild show, and the chat room gets a little wild. And so
it's the twit version of humor.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you don't want to go in. If you don't understand the geek culture, you definitely don't want to go in there then.
But no, go in on off hours. And honestly, we're happy now. The problem is, and also be patient. Please be aware of the fact that just because you came in and asked a question, it doesn't mean we necessarily saw you.
Yeah.
You might have to ask us a few times.
Well, as you can see, the chat scrolls very rapidly. There's a lot going on in there. And so, it's kind of crazy. Kind of crazy. Anyway, Aaron, what can I do for you?
Yeah, so here's the thing. So I've been being good. Upgraded, doing the Windows thing, doing all sorts of stuff. Yeah, I bought myself a little present of a Blu-ray player.
Okay.
And, of course, because I'm a cheapskate, I got an OEM. I usually like to watch DVDs on VLC when I'm watching on my computer. But I need, now, you know what's coming next, because I'm a pirate. Because I want to watch it on something besides my home theater, I need to get codecs in order to get this thing to play. And I was wondering if you might have some hints.
You mean you want to watch
Blu-rays on my computer?
So you have an external Blu-ray player that you'd like to connect to the computer and watch it?
It's an internal Blu-ray player.
Oh, it's in the computer?
It's in the computer.
And nothing plays?
Yeah, Yeah, nothing plays. It says I need a codec to play it.
You need what you really need is, yeah, it's, this is unfortunate. I now understand what's going on. So there's the copy protection aspect, but that's not the issue here. The issue here is you need a, just as in the old days when you got a DVD and you put it in a computer, it didn't have a DVD player. I don't know why Apple bundles DVD players with Macintoshes, not Blu-ray ones, but DVD software. Windows, some manufacturers will bundle, you know, CyberLink, Power DVD, one of the DVD players in there. That's what you need. You need one that will play back Blu-rays. CyberLink's Power DVD 12 is probably the best one for this. It's $75 for the Pro. The standard version is $50. VLC might play it back. I don't know. Beatmaster. Yeah, Beatmaster says it possibly will. Yeah. So if you go in the chat room, I think you're in there, Aaron, you'll see that there are sites to go that you can use the free. Now, this is not a legal way to do it, by the way. You can use the free VLC, videoland.org VLC player. And then you need, as you said, the codecs, that is the compression decompression algorithms. Those are proprietary. They have never been allowed out in the wild. So if you get them and download them from somebody, you're getting illicit codecs. But you can do it. Slysoft is another place to go to get the codecs. Slysoft makes the Blu-ray DVD ripping software, also illegal. Or you can go legally, and that's, by the way, probably why Power DVD is so expensive, because they licensed the codecs. And I think it's probably a good idea to go with Power DVD, to be honest, because I think it's just going to be a little bit easier. There's some issues, so forth and so on. Scissor Fight says, no, they say they're legal on the website. They say it's legal, but I don't. I think just because they say so doesn't mean it is. The movie industry learned a lesson after making DVDs. Remember DVD John, the high school kid from, where is he from? Norway, Denmark, from Scandinavia, cracked the copy protection used on DVDs within months of its release. And ever since, it's been trivial, no problem, easy to copy a DVD. So when the Blu-ray spec came up, the movie industry said, we're not going to make that same mistake. So they came up with all sorts of tricks, including revocable keys. In fact, all DVD players are supposed to be able to get online periodically to check to see if the key has been revoked and to get a new one if it has. So that if the Blu-ray key gets leaked, they can give out a new one. I mean, it just goes on and on. And it's still been cracked. It's still been cracked. Just not as easily, not as conveniently. And it's certainly the case that if you don't buy a legitimate licensed Blu-ray player like Power DVD, or if you download codecs from the internet for free, that those are definitely not official and allowed and legal. The reason is it's very difficult to do what they want to do, because in order for you to be able to play a DVD or a Blu-ray back, you have to store the key that unlocks this encrypted file in memory. So if that's the case, then it's not so difficult to get the key and save it out and then have it. And so that's really how these programs work. It's so tough to do what they really want to do. It's so tough. Thank you, Aaron. Good to talk to you. Let's see. Do I have time for another call? I think not. I'll tell you what. I will point you to thetechguylabs.com, our website. That's where you can get in the chat room. Say hello to Aaron. Talk about ways to circumvent copy protection. Actually, we have pretty strict rules in the chat room. We don't allow piracy talk in there. And I really want to underscore this. I am not in favor of stealing content, stealing movies. I am not in favor of piracy in the least. You should pay for content. I make content. I expect, you know, to make a living doing it. You should pay for the content you use. That's the least you can do. But I do think that you should have also the right to modify this content for your own personal use, to make it more convenient, to put it on a different device. It shouldn't be so hard to watch a movie if you've paid for it. And that's what I encourage people to do and figure out. But don't steal. got to support. You got, hey, you love these movies. You love this music. Support it, right? Make sure that the people who create it get paid, get remunerated appropriately. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Another hour to come. Actually, no, not even that long. Another half hour to come on our Tech Guy show. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. The website, techguylabs.com. The chat room, of course, as you all know, is irc.twit.tv. And do I have to tell you who I'm rooting for in the Super Bowl? I don't think so. It might have something to do with the fact that I'm wearing a 49ers sweatshirt, hat, scarf, even my underwear. It says 49ers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He is Dick DiBartolo, the gadget guy. Normally, Dick joins us on Saturdays, but since I wasn't here yesterday, thought it'd be good to get Dick. You look, okay, now, this is the radio, so nobody's seeing what I'm seeing.
No, okay.
But I have a television screen in the studio here over my left shoulder. But you can actually watch this. We put video out after the fact, so you can watch it or watch our live stream. And Dick's head comes in on this video. Your head is so massive, it looks like Oz, the great and powerful, has appeared to...
I am Oz.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Dick is Mad Magazine's maddest writer for the last, I don't know, I don't even want to say years. For a lifetime.
5-0.
When is your 50th anniversary? Do you have a party?
You know what? It happened in March.
We missed
it. 2012. I missed it. Actually, Sam Viviano, the art director of Mad, called me in one day and he said, I want to shake your hands because you have now made the list of people who have been in Mad for 50 years.
That can't be a very long list.
No, it's a very short list, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Don Martin, was he there when you came?
Don Martin was there, but Don Martin has passed
gone.
On.
Yeah.
Dave Berg's The Lightest Side Of has passed on.
So you're not only one of the longest employees, you're the only one still alive.
Well, there's Al Jaffe, thank goodness.
He's
Al
like Jaffe 90. How old is Al?
Al Jaffe is, I believe, 92.
Wow. He's the guy who invented the gatefold, the fold-in.
The Mad Fold-In.
Yeah.
The Mad Fold-In. When Playboy came out with the Mad Fold-Out, he went to Gaines, the founder publisher, and said, Bill, I got a great idea. We're too poor to have a fold-out to compete with Playboy. The only thing we can afford to do is do a fold-in. And Bill said, I love it. What would it be like? And then Jaffe described it. So
he just, from whole cloth, he made that thing up. That's neat.
Yes, and it was supposed to be a one-time gag.
It's still my favorite part of the magazine.
It is a lot of people's favorite part. Yes.
That's
and if
really
you ever
neat.
Go to a newsstand and find an issue folded, that is the reason why. It's because people who buy Mad and collect it will not fold their own issue.
Oh, that's hysterical.
So they go to the newsstand.
They've got to see. Because it's kind of a riddle because you want to. They ask a question, then you fold it and you see the answer. So they can't stand not knowing, but they don't want to fold their own. They want to keep it collectible.
However, that has been solved because now there's a digital version only for the iPad, and with a click of the mouse, you just run your mouse across it, and it folds.
I could never fold it straight anyway, you know.
Yeah, and it's also you can fold it on a monitor, but you need a new monitor for every folding.
Every magazine. So Dick joins us normally on Saturdays with a gadget of the week, because besides being Mad Magazine's maddest writer, he's also a gadget hound.
Yes.
You got something for us this week?
Yeah, I do. You know what? One of the fun things about CES is going to the other exhibition hall over at the Venetian.
Oh, you mean the adult expedition?
No, that too.
Yeah,
no, actually, the adult, you know what?
They moved that. I was so mad. It's not there anymore.
Not only did they move it, Leo, but now that there's so much free adult entertainment on the web, I believe it now takes place in a phone booth. Like, 2 weeks after CES.
Yeah.
No, but they have new inventions. They have new product world and all that stuff over at the Venetian.
It was at the Venetian this year, yeah.
Yes.
Well, that just shows you how big the Consumer Electronics Show is. It's so big, and this was about a month ago. It's so big, it doesn't fit in the enormous Las Vegas Convention Center. They actually have to take over the Venetian Hotel as well.
Exactly.
Now, I didn't make it there, and I was bemoaning the fact that, oh, I see no innovation, everything's obvious. And somebody said, no, no, you can't. This is all at the Venetian is the innovation.
So, no, that's exactly right.
I feel bad.
And this is a clever idea. It's coming out in February, March timeframe. So it's called the Smart Sound Smartphone Case, okay? So it's a protective case for your smartphone. They sent me one, a mock-up version for the Galaxy S3. So it has a click-out stand. But the stand also acts as a passive horn for the speakers. So when you pop the stand open, not only can you stand your phone vertically or horizontally, it will increase the volume of the sound. They also, instead of just making a hole where the flash is, they made a little port that has a really nice reflector.
It's like a megaphone on the back of your phone.
Yeah, it is. It is. But no one will see it because it also acts as a stand.
Yeah, it's a kickstand.
It's a kickstand. Yeah.
And so is it a lot louder?
You know what, Leo? I would say it's maybe 15 to 20% louder. Wow. You know, I did a blindfold test. I had Dennis open and close it, and for me to say open, close. But also, the guy did email me to tell me that the one that they let me take from the show was not the final model, and that they're still working on it. I also like the fact that the little flash hole, instead of it just being a hole in plastic, which a lot of cases just do, so your flash can shine through, they put a nice kind of funnel-shaped reflector in there, so I do think it will actually increase the light output from the flash of your smartphone. And it's under $40. So it's a less than the price of most cases. And you get a lot of little extra features. You know, the little volume thing, the fact that it's a stand, the fact that you have the little extra reflective stuff, and that you also end up with a phone case.
You know, I have to say that in some ways, CES was almost an iPhone case an accessory show.
Oh, no, absolutely. You know, talk about phone booths. If you took away the Bluetooth speakers, the headphones, and all the cases, it could fit in a small room.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you found one of the great innovations, and I did too, were the Bluetooth speakers that were also NFC, so that you could just tap your phone and it would be paired.
That's one of the best uses for this near field communications or NFC chip that's being built into newer phones, not the iPhone, but other phones, is that you can use it to connect with a device and say, here I am, and the Bluetooth connection's automatic. And I really think that's fantastic.
No, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So they're at smartsoundcase.com. And as I said, the February, March time period is when they'll be shipping them.
You know, it's funny because I saw a case that I really liked at CES too, that was a Lego case that you put on your iPhone, and then you can build your iPhone into your Lego creations.
That's
good. Compatible with Lego bricks.
And that's good.
I asked him, I said, well, how can you even make this? Are you licensing it?
Yeah, said, yeah. Like,
the patent has expired. It expired a couple of years ago. Anybody can now make Lego pieces without licensing it.
Aren't patents for like 50 years? If you
Lego's old. Lego's old, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So it recently expired. So, in fact, I know a lot of the guys who do the – you've seen these 3D printers where you feed them a computer design,
yes,
and it will actually make an object. You can make Lego bricks that way. Lego of any kind, yeah.
You know what, Leo? I'm thinking.
Wow, Lego, that's impressive. Oh, there's more. I'm sorry.
No, a Kickstarter project.
Yes.
Lego Frankfurters with Lego buns.
And
you could build your own. Well, Lego meat.
Lego meat. Now you're talking.
Now you can build your own sandwich.
And it all snaps together and it never falls apart. Who needs toothpicks? Yeah. The toothpick industry is going to kill you. They're going to sue you out of existence.
That's okay. Yeah. That's what Kickstarter is all about. Let me just get LegoHero.com right now.
Go to Dick has more, by the way, crazy websites. There's one that's got a really long name.
Holiday greetings from Dick T. Bartola, Maddest Writer, and thegizwiz.com.
It's real.
It's real. It's three letters short of the longest you're allowed to get for a website.
Short one for his regular site, gizwiz.biz. Go there. You could play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. And Dick will talk again next Saturday and on Tuesday for our regular Gizwiz show. Have a great week.
I'll be there. Thanks.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and we're getting ready for the big game. So excited for a 49ers. But the geeks must go on. The calls must go on. And Rob and Tarzan has been very patient. Actually, I think I talked to Rob earlier, and we didn't even get to your question, Rob. So thank you for being very patient. You're very patient with me.
No, this is Rob from Tarzana. You spoke with another Rob.
Right? Oh, that's right. It was a different Rob. All right, Rob. What can I do for you, Rob, from Tarzana?
I'm calling about a problem with iTunes. Yes. I'm a Windows 7 user, and when I turn on iTunes on my Windows 7 PC with iTunes Match turned on,
okay,
iTunes crashes during the upload process. And I've isolated the problem to Match. I know that it's Match because when I disable Match,
everything's
iTunes
fine.
Works perfectly.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, lovely. So I've spoken a couple times with Apple senior tech support, and we've tried several remedies like deleting iTunes IDL files.
Do they ever just go, we just never have worked well on Windows?
No, but I've heard you say that on your show several times.
Yeah. It must be hard for them because they can't. You know, they're not allowed to.
Of course.
But they are thinking, as you speak to them, oh, no, another Windows user. Oh, no.
Another Windows user. Oh, no.
And it's not your fault. It's not Windows' fault. It's Apple's fault. But they just don't seem to be able to make iTunes work reliably on Windows. I don't know why. I just don't know.
We even tried turning off the non-essential programs in my start folder, and it still didn't work. So
here's what I always – this is the voodoo, and I admit it's voodoo, that I always recommend that if you're using iTunes on Windows is that you uninstall it, and not just iTunes, but very important to uninstall QuickTime because it uses – and you'll notice when you install iTunes on Windows, you have to install QuickTime. It uses QuickTime for playing back music, and it almost certainly uses it for Match. So I would uninstall QuickTime and uninstall. The problems I experience often are with QuickTime. So if you fully uninstall those, and then my recommendation is install QuickTime by itself first from the iTunes site. QuickTime for Windows, obviously. And then download iTunes. It'll say, oh, I see you already have QuickTime, so I won't try to install it. It's my experience that is one of the few things you can do. I mean, seriously, it's voodoo because there's not much you can fix. I don't know what's wrong, but this is all I can recommend, and it often seems to work. And it's because I think that when you install iTunes with QuickTime, it seems like it doesn't necessarily do the right job. So uninstall as best you can all of QuickTime, all of iTunes. Install QuickTime standalone first, and then install iTunes, and cross your fingers. Is it a very large library?
About 7,400 songs.
That's pretty big.
Is it? But, you know, I've asked, it's interesting, I asked Apple to allow me, since we haven't figured that out, how to work this yet, I asked them to allow me to download all of my DRM-protected tracks that I bought a few years ago so that I could at least have them in 256 rather than 100.
Yeah, what'd they say?
Kilobytes.
Yeah.
Well, so what happened? Interesting. When the iTunes support guy helped me with some of this, some of my downloaded tracks were still 128 kilobytes copy protected. And so
wrong.
What I'm wondering is, will that change if and when I can use Match?
Yeah, it's supposed to. I can see of no reason why not. So the deal is they don't offer DRM tracks anymore. So if you ever bought anything on iTunes and you do iTunes Match, the key is to delete the one you got before. Once you've matched it, don't delete anything you haven't matched. But you can delete the matched files and then say, oh, I deleted it and downloaded it again. The version you download at that point will be the only version they sell anymore, which is unprotected. And it should be 256 kilobit AAC.
Now, when I get rid of iTunes, will it affect any of my files that are currently on my
computer? What I want you to do, and I think this you could do as a second stage, but I think it's probably going to be required, is to also delete the entire iTunes, not the music, obviously, but the folders, the you know, everything but the music in the folder, including the XML files, the database, the libraries. You're going to import a whole new library. I hope there's nothing in there you want to keep, like song ratings or stuff like that.
Well, just playlists that I can always recreate.
Yeah. So the reason I'm saying that is you have a database that iTunes uses to see where the songs are and what songs you have and so forth. If that gets corrupted, you're going to have a symptom like this. So,
well, if I get rid of all that other stuff in the iTunes folder, doesn't that affect with these AAC files the covers also of the records?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. But you'll get them again when you download, when you match them.
Oh, okay.
You'll get all that stuff again. Because it's going to replace all that stuff. Just don't delete the music. In fact, to be safe, what I would do is back up the iTunes folder before you delete it.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. If you back it up to an external drive and then start completely, as if you never had iTunes or music on your system, start completely fresh. And then you could import, you could add to library from your backup. Say, hey, there's the music folder, add to library. It should import the album cover as well as all the stuff. It might even get the playlist, but it will have to build a new database, and that's what you want.
I get it. Hey, Leo, I've got some great feedback on a call from last April.
Yeah, what?
I called you last April and asked about how with phone company voicemail I could set things up on my phone so that I could see flashing lights or audible sounds.
Yeah. Do you ever figure that out? Yeah.
Well, what happened is, yeah, remember the chat room advised me and you advised me to get phones that are VMMI compliant.
Right.
If my phone company supports them.
Right.
Turns out that AT&T doesn't support VMMI on landlines in my neighborhood. So I found the old Leo Laporte solution, and it works great.
What's that?
That is the AT&T Model 1740 answering machine. It's one of the few machines around that it really sounds great, the incoming and outgoing message. There's an illuminated message counter, and you can set up the machine to chirp if you want to.
I love it.
Waiting for you.
And they're only $16.
It's nothing, and it's really compact, too.
And that one has the notification that there's a voicemail waiting for you.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
And I actually put that up on your website. That
thank
was
you.
A wonderful solution.
Thank you. Well, it's great to talk to you again, Rob.
Great talking to you.
Let me know how the match stuff works.
I will.
Because I hear, like those Apple guys, I hear all the time from Windows users who just can't get it working. All right, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I worry now. Walter on the line from Westchester. What happened, Walter?
Oh, excuse me.
I only have about a minute, so.
Oh, just a minute.
Yeah.
Somehow my Gmail has gotten hacked just recently, but they only sent emails to people that I had recently sent emails to. There
okay.
Like, maybe eight
yep.
people that were on the
yep.
list that got emails.
Okay.
And I have a very extensive address.
Well, they just picked it. They picked it random. They, you know.
Okay.
These guys aren't that.
But I was wondering if it's
thorough.
Something that I did.
No, they got your password somehow. You've changed the password since, I trust.
Yes.
So they're not in there anymore.
No.
Good. No, they. You know what? They were hurried. They were rushed. They weren't thorough. They picked eight people.
But you know, I have. My email on a Galaxy 2, a Galaxy 3.
Yeah, I do too. I'm Gmail. As somebody in the chat room said, getting my Gmail hacked would be my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Let me suggest you turn on something Google calls two-step authentication.
Yeah.
It's a pain in the butt. It really is. But it works, and you will never get hacked again. And also really important, I'm sure you've done this. You must have because you got your email back. Make sure you associate a phone number with your Gmail account. So if somebody hijacks your account, changes the password, you can change it back because only you have access to your smartphone. That's really important with Gmail. Gmail has good security, fortunately, but I'm so sorry that happened. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Go Niners! Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.